literally changed places. I'm not in my office right now. I decided today to sit on my desk, like dining table, and record this podcast with low lighting and background YouTube video fireplace playing. I decided to record this bonus episode like in a different way as we used to do it. So far, it seems very nice, very cozy. So maybe I'll get used to it while recording the bonus episodes. By the way, welcome everyone to another episode of the Full Stack Radio, the podcast where we, as always, go inside the world of web development and programming. I'm your host, as always, Harry, and today's episode is a special one, a special bonus episode that I wanted to start describing since the last one, actually. And it is about choosing the right development tools, as you obviously read in the description and the title of the podcast. So whether you're just a seasoned developer or just starting, selecting the right tools can be like quite a nightmare. At least for me, it was in the beginning of my career, let's say. But it's significantly more important, and like it has a more perfect workflow and productivity on your side than if you did it without thinking anything. So let's jump right into it and explore what we have to understand. How can we start from the beginning to use these development tools? How to do the research to find them and how to use them? Pros and cons I will also be sharing. So I prepared like a table with information that I can show you. I can describe it to you because this is a podcast. And just like we can start with a first overview of the things. So like development tools may be considered like different kinds of software, maybe, because we're developers. And the first one can be the text editors. So text editors can be included as the most important and basic, like mostly used tools through your whole journey as a developer. Not as a web developer only, but also all kinds of developers have this this option. So text editors are the main point where your coding is going to be happening, where you actually wake up, have your morning coffee, you open up your laptop or your PC, and this is the first thing that you click to open in order to write or read your code. There have been some fights on the internet between these two, but I'm going to be describing the most popular ones. First one is Visual Studio Code, my personal favorite, which is free, of course, an open source editor for your development sessions. It has a great extension support. I also have an extension on VS Code. It's nothing too fancy. It's only a text like appearance template that changes the coloring of the text. But apart from that, there are very, very good and a rich combination of extensions for your easiness, let's say, in order to write code and read code, of course. There are other extensions where you can get syntax errors before even waiting for the standard visual editor to understand your errors, and so many more. The good part about Visual Studio Code is that it is cross-platform, which means that even if I want to, let's say, write code right where I am, so let's say now that I'm in the living room, in the dining table, I wanted to open up my laptop and start writing some code or read the latest pull request that I created. If I open it from my MacBook, it will work properly. If I decide to, let's say, write two lines of code here in the living room and then go back to my office and open my PC and click the Visual Studio Code application, I am able to use it also there. I just need to, you know, deploy, clone the website, clone the project that I have and work with it. It's just like that. It's just so easy to navigate between the desktops. And I think maybe you can do this also with your iPad. I'm not sure, but I think I saw someone do this. Because now the keyboards and of course there is available, I think, the Visual Studio Code for the web. So you can also clone your project maybe there, or maybe even display what you've done so far throughout your project building process. But except from that, Visual Studio Code has also something like very important that doesn't make it exceed expectations, because it takes actually so much resources, and the resource spending is quite intensive actually, because if you go inside the program, inside the application, and start building stuff, the data that is building can be quite hard for your PC or for your laptop, just like as mine, for example, because I currently have the MacBook Air 2019 Intel processor. So you can imagine how slow this can become in the process of me building a React website with NPM and NPX, then to create the app and different node packages to install. This, in an overall performance, not for a small project, nor either a medium one, this can be quite a pain in the ass, to be honest. Because it's been some times where with this laptop, I created like a huge project. I remember for Laravel, it was built with Laravel, and it actually took some time before it built the whole thing. I was practicing my Laravel plus Vue.js skills, and I was trying to build an Instagram clone. And all of that just resulted in my laptop just heating up with no limitations at all. But so far, this is my favorite one. Visual Studio Code just checks everything in my list. It has the extensions, which I really like. You can find, I don't know, like 1 million of them available in the store, in the marketplace. And you can just do your job quickly, and in most of the cases, if you don't have my laptop, you can do your job in a very good performance. But let's move to the second one, which is Sublime Text. This is also the second application that has been debated. And apart from its lightweightness, I don't know if that's the word. It's lightweight, it's fast, and it's highly customizable. I haven't used it for a long time frame, but I remember using it in my university time. So what we had was very good speed and performance reviews that were like exceedingly nice, exceedingly good. We never had issues with performance, neither in my laptop, which, as I told you, it can be slow sometimes, nor in the other good ones, highly performance ones. But the disadvantage, let's say, and the bad part is like it requires a paid license. For if you actually want to continuously use it, then you need a license. You need to pay a license for it. Don't ask me about cracked versions or anything like that. I don't know if this is actually feasible, but Sublime Text just, crosses the checkboxes of performance. I think this is like a better point compared to the Visual Studio Code, because as I told you, at least for me in my laptop, it doesn't work. Sometimes it doesn't work. When I have huge projects or high resource ones, it just doesn't work. But if you wanted to at least move from the text editor as a web developer, because mostly web developers use these text editors, then you are in the whole new section of the process for programming. You are in the IDE area. So if you are like in the IDE section of the area, then you are a programmer that uses Java or C or C++ and all of these hardcore programming languages. And you obviously need an IDE. So an IDE is an integrated development environment where you have to focus on specific languages that you will be writing on and with. So this is not a text editor anymore. This is a whole platform, a whole environment where you write heavy stuff. So let's, for example, take the first one, that it is IntelliJ. IntelliJ is actually an IDE, as I told you before, but it is Java focused. It has a very advanced coding assistance and tools that will help you with anything that you like to build with Java. And of course, I think the main feature that I mostly loved when I was developing with Java during, of course, my university time, it was that it had a smart code completion where you were writing something and it was completing your request, your, I don't know, your wishes to write that code or a function on its own. So I know you can do this also on Visual Studio. I don't know about Sublime Text, but this one was specifically designed for IntelliJ and Java focused programming. So this had actually come so far into the completion system and the smart code. I don't know if it is AI that's working on behind it, but it definitely is very, very good in terms of code completion. But the fact again is related to the resource management and the performance issues that it has, because it's a very big and a very large heavyweight application that requires so many system resources to be working as you're building your project or your application with Java mainly. But of course, as I said it before, smart code completion is their best feature and you can work with it with no issues at all if you have a very, very good PC or a laptop, or just like maybe sometimes more in the medium section of machines, laptops and stuff. But compared to also IntelliJ, we have Visual Studio, the normal one, the basic one. I think Visual Studio was the first one that was introduced, and then it was Visual Studio Code, which was like more web development, like web development, yeah. So Visual Studio Code was the last one that was created, but Visual Studio, the basic one, it is the very first version of the Visual Studio, powerful IDE, and I think that the most important stuff about this IDE is that it's great for debugging. And it has a very, very good system and a flow that requires you to debug your features and your errors, most probably, with the integrated debugging features. And the comprehensive, of course, toolset that they got allows you to do just anything. I remember also, I've worked with it during the university time with C and C++ and C Sharp specifically. And it had like a tool set that you can create Windows application, Windows, something like that, I think it's what. It had a tool set where you can create toolbars and modal boxes for Windows and basically anything that you needed in order to build your application with Windows and stuff. Of course, the main consequence of that is that Visual Studio Original is only available for Windows. You can find it, I think, for Mac, but there are very, very low features. Like, I don't know if it's actually working or has someone created it and made it available for Mac just to prove a point that he can create it on Mac, but it's mainly Windows only. So I think this kind of sucks. I remember I had to install Windows on my Mac in order to be working with this on my during my university time, so it was kind of a struggle to do that. But if you're a developer, experienced one, junior one, or just started, you have these four options. Of course, there are different kinds of IDEs and text editors, but I mostly highlighted the four most important ones, just for starters. So Visual Studio Code and Sublime Text are text editors you can use mainly on web development, and then IDEs like IntelliJ and VS, like Visual Studio, are mostly on more heavyweight programming. Java, C Sharp, and C++ are mainly the languages to go. But as a developer, of course, you don't need only text editors and IDEs, but also version control systems. Git and GitHub are the most important things that you have to have knowledge on when you're starting, and if you're starting with web development or even programming in general. Git is a distributed version control system, and it helps you to track the changes in your source code during development. So it is a package, like a version control system, where you can easily install it by searching on Google Git, install Git and anything like that. You can insert it in your laptop or on your system in general. And by the use of it, I'm going to be describing it to you in general. You can use Git to upload your code on GitHub, which is the platform that can be used from Git, and have basically your code either on private or in public status, just standing right there and can be available whenever you need it. So let's say you lose everything on your laptop, you just install Git on your system and pull the changes that you want to pull if you saved it there. It's like that basic. So imagine that you, once you upload your code there, you cannot ever lose it. Except, of course, if you delete it from GitHub. But for beginners, this is not so well documented. I mean, there is no good documentation and stuff about Git. You need to search a little bit to understand what each command does, what you need to know, what are the most important and most used ones, and then move on to the most advanced ones like cherry pick and stuff. But I'm not going to be going through that right now. It's excellent in branching and merging. So you have different branches, different merging systems, and many more. But it's not easy to start for the beginners. GitHub, in the other side, it's, as I said, the platform where you can use Git. So on GitHub, there are different repositories, also called projects, that facilitate the collaboration you do and the code review. So if you have something on your machine and you would like to collaborate with some other developer for it, you can use GitHub and you can put your different changes on different branches on your project. So this is the perfect opportunity for you and your team to be working with GitHub. As I said, it is perfect for social coding and collaboration features, but I think the most important consequence is that it is limited for private repositories for free accounts. I think this does not include the private repositories anymore. I think I couldn't find any important consequence on that, but this was what I found. So you cannot create too many private repositories as a free account. I remember I have a pro one, but that's why I didn't got the chance to find it. But depending on my internet search, I found that free accounts have limited private repositories to be created. Otherwise, you can just put it on public status. Moving on further, we have package managers, which are NPM and PIP for Python. So mostly as a developer, I use NPM, which is the Node Package Manager. Node Package Manager is working with Node.js packages and modules. It has a huge repository of packages, but it can experience version conflicts. So I remember specifically, just to make you understand this, this consequence, if a project uses, let's say, version 2, and you have version 1 or 3, of your project, it can sometimes lead to errors. You cannot understand where the error is, why your code is breaking, and so many more conflicts and versions of conflicts, as I said. But in general, I think it's the most used package manager out there. NPM and NPX, I think it's the latest one that I use specifically for React. But if you're working with Python, though, there is also the Python Package Index, which is also called the PIP, where you can install Python packages. This is exactly the same thing as the Node Package Manager, the NPM, but with Python. It is simple and easy to use, but the bad part is that it is Python specific. So you cannot use it with any other languages at all. I'm not going to be mainly focusing on task runners, but just for your information, I'm going to be showcasing these two. We have task runners, the Gulp and the Grunt. The Gulp is actually JavaScript based. It's a task runner. If you want it for any reason to automate your task while you are developing stuff, you can use Gulp, G-U-L-P. It's mostly used because it is efficient in streamlining your tasks. So let's say if you have like repetitive tasks you have to do every time, you can use Gulp and you can automate these tasks based on JavaScript. And the bad part is actually that it requires only Node.js to be run. So if you're not familiar with Node.js, then it's quite difficult and quite complex to use Gulp. On the other hand, we have Grunt, G-R-U-N-T, which is also JavaScript-based, and it is also a task runner. And it has like a huge variety of plugins that you can use, and a library, a whole library marketplace, I think, about how you can use and what to use during your development. But it is actually very complex. The configuration to set the whole Grunt application is very complex, and you may need to spend hours and hours in the documentation just to understand how to set Grunt up for your automated tasks. But after that, you'll just be ready to go. Maybe you'll just spend a day trying to figure out the configuration on your own project, but then it will just be very easy to go. Except from the task runners, though, lately we have Docker and Kubernetes. I don't know if this is the right name and the right... I'm probably butchering this, but in any case, we have containers when we try to build different application with containers. So Docker, on the one hand, is the platform when you develop and ship and run applications inside a container. I'm not going to be pushing through this container title and the container subject, because I think we should be creating another podcast about the containers, just solely about containers. But as I said, Docker is a platform for developing, shipping, and running applications all in one container. So it's like a consistent environment, and you can use it basically on all other environments except yours. So we can say that it is cross-platform, cross-environment application container. But the fact that it requires so much understanding of the configuration and the concepts and the containers of the concepts can be pretty tricky. It can require you maybe a huge amount of time to just understand how containers work, and specifically Docker. On the other side, Kubernetes is what I said about Docker is the complete opposite thing, because it's open source. It's a container orchestration system that can help you automate your job, automate your developments. Also, not on the development part, but the deployment, the scaling, and the management of your system can easily be done by Kubernetes. Scaling applications can be quite as easy as Docker, but Kubernetes is actually better on this one. The bad part, though, is like it's steeper learning for beginners. It's more basic than Docker, but still needs a little bit of improvement regarding the whole process. So Kubernetes, I think I would be the first thing to go if I wanted to be starting with containers as a beginner. But I would surely say myself I'm a beginner if I have learned all of that stuff. And the last one was containers to understand. So if I was very, very new to containers, then I'd say I'm a beginner and I need to start with something like a container and use it in all applications, in all my environments. But this sums up how far you need to go inside the containers subject. Okay, so I think that concludes the exploration on the development tools. We talked about how to understand the text editors, which are the most important ones. We talked about Visual Studio Code and Sublime Text as their examples. We talked about IDEs, IntelliJ and Visual Studio. We talked about also version control systems, which include Git and its environment, GitHub, which are one of the most important environments for version control systems. We talked about package managers, NPM, PAP, task runners with Gulp and Grunt. And finally, we concluded everything with the most advanced stuff, which includes containers with Docker and Kubernetes. We have concluded the exploration for the development tools, but remember that choosing the right tools can make your journey smoother and more enjoyable. So take more time into analyzing what features and what tools you need to use for your project, and then you'll be more easily taken inside the process of the development of what you actually want to build. I hope this information helps you in choosing the tools that best fit in your workflow. So as always, thank you for tuning into the Full Stack Radio. If you found this episode valuable, don't forget to subscribe, maybe leave a review and share it with your fellow developers. Happy coding, and see you all.